This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
It was November 1980, if I can take you all the way back to just a couple of months after I was born, and the Washington Post ran an article with the headline, Electronics Threatens NYSE Monopoly. The piece detailed how after two centuries, the New York Stock Exchange's ancient monopoly was crumbling beneath the weight of regulatory change, technology, and old-fashioned competition. Now, fast forward nearly four decades, yes, I'm almost 40, and the NYSE isn't dead, but we find a very similar occurrence taking place in local capital markets. For much of the past 130 years, the JSE's dominated the local landscape. It's been the sole provider of most stock exchange services in the country. It's become a very well-known, a very highly respected and effective business, but certainly one that had become a little bit ensconced in its monopoly. Then we saw all things change. Back in August of 2016, the old FSB, as it was called then, issued two new exchange licenses, one to Zarex and one to 4 Africa Exchange, 4AX. Then in April last year, it issued another license to A2X Markets. And then later last year, it issued a license to Equity Express Securities Exchange. Now, we've got the three X's in studio to talk about what this has actually meant and what they've achieved so far and what their plans are for South African capital markets domination. It's a great pleasure to welcome, firstly, 4AX's Noah Greenhill. Noah, you're now the Business Development Manager at 4AX. Great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Michael.
Next to you is Kevin Brady, the CEO of A2X. Kevin, I think we were speaking last week when you were in London, so good to see you back in sunny South Africa.
Well, thank you for having me.
And last but certainly not least is Saki Zambaka, Executive Director of Zarex.
Thank you.
Excuse my X's there. Now, as a backdrop, and perhaps we'll just run through, starting with you, Noah, competition is important in all industries. But in capital markets in particular, why do we need competition? In South Africa, can we sustain all of these exchanges?
You know, Michael, I mean, just let's look at the incumbent. There's 380-odd companies listed there. Look at the SIPSI, the companies registered there. Let's argue that there's around 800,000 companies registered. Let's argue that 400,000 of those are shelf companies. And let's assume that of the balance, the other 400,000, 90% of those will never be in a position or have a desire to list. So we're down to about 40,000 companies. Let's take 10% of those. That's 4,000 companies. I think there's plenty room for markets or capital market products that serve that universe of companies.
That's a pretty compelling argument, Kevin.
Look, I think as you mentioned earlier, I mean, competition has shown to be good for all industries and generally benefits the end consumer. Look, as in South Africa, we're hardly trailblazing. We're somewhat behind the international best practice. There is no shortage of research and evidence from the US to Europe to Australia, plus many other emerging markets, about what competition has brought to capital markets. So they wouldn't have introduced it without the belief that it would be helping the end consumer. And there's no doubt there's kind of three key things that it drives. One is that they bring the latest technology. Secondly, they reduce the direct cost of doing business. And this has an indirect impact of improving the quality of the market. And the last thing is that they become more innovative and responsive. And that's got to be good for all.
And it is the beauty of competition, Saki, is that it spurs even the incumbent to itself innovate. T3 to me isn't really innovating too much. I don't want to take too much of a dig. Saki, in your opinion, what does this bring to the local market?
I mean, you mentioned the first thing about T3. I mean, why T3 when you can have T0? So those are innovations that are coming. And I mean, the beauty of having immediate settlements is that you can do many things. I mean, we're now introducing what we call it ZAX restricted schemes, where effectively you create liquidity in a restricted environment, whether it's PE or any other designation and issue I may have. So I think innovation is the one key thing, not only on systems, but even the products themselves. I mean, we have one of the biggest capital markets in the world, actually, in South Africa. I think people often don't realize we have, I I think almost 9 trillion rands of funds, assets under management. And if you look at that and where those funds are deployed, I think that's the other big thing. We need an environment that encourages new generation entrepreneurs to have access to capital markets. And what we're trying to do is to demystify that, you know, exchanges must be this big thing, inaccessible to companies, that is over-bureaucratized. So we're making the systems not only cheaper but simpler and relevant to what the market requires. So the innovation for me is not just a thing that's out there on systems and IT, but it's also on the products. I mean, if you look at the new funds who are trying to get into venture capital, they battle raising money because we've just simply had a market that's lazy and just look at the top big companies, but doesn't look at who's going to be the next MTN, who's going to be the next Naspers, who's going to be, you know.
The 12J marketplace, and we'll come back to that. So PSG announced its results today. It's got PSG Alpha. It's got its own little VC incubator, but we could be doing so much more. Noah, in terms of your benchmarks against what you thought you would accomplish since launch and what you have achieved, are you on track? Are you perhaps slightly behind schedule?
You know, Michael, I mean, these things, when you plan them, the expectation is that the South African capital markets are going to embrace the notion of a new entrant to the marketplace, and they're going to kind of stand outside your door in a line waiting to sign up to list, to participate as an authorized user, to participate as an issuer agent, and everybody's going to be there because they love the fact that you're around. Fact is, it doesn't happen like that. And I think from a 4AX perspective, the notion has always been slow and steady. Let's get the right guys on. Let's get the right stakeholders involved. Let's get the right brokers. Let's get the right shareholders and build a business over time. This isn't a one-day game. This is a five-day game. We're in it for the long haul.
Which means perhaps not as much as you were hoping to initially, but I think with all these things, will take time.
Of course they'll take time. And again, this isn't, you know, you're not selling Coca-Cola. And I saw somewhere on, I think it was on Twitter, on Facebook, on one of these social media sites, never be disconcerted because Coca-Cola in its first year sold 12 bottles or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Same case here. We're building a business.
Kevin?
Look, I agreed. These things do take time. I think one obviously starts off someone naively expecting the market maybe to embrace things quicker than you would expect. And I think one underestimates, you know, just because you know something and you're excited, that it takes time to educate markets. It takes time to change infrastructure. And I don't think one can ever underestimate how hard it is to break a long-standing monopoly. But I think we're starting to see it in South Africa.
Obviously, price, competitiveness, efficiencies, Saki, that you mentioned, are a key advantage here in your arsenal. Has it taken the market a bit longer than you had anticipated for them to realize that these are true advantages? Is it a question of trust? If you're in the media game and you want to establish a new newspaper, you may think if you can go to spaza shops all over the country and grow up to a circulation of 500,000 in a year, people will want to advertise. No, they won't. They want to see some traction. They want to develop trust over time. Are you finding that is one of your issues?
So certainly, I mean, trust is a big thing in financial markets. Everybody sees, okay, there's new entrants, what are they going to bring? So I think that in a lot of people's minds, whether they want to admit or not, does play a role in the decision that they make. It's been an interesting journey from us in that we would have liked to have more listings, so we don't have as much listings as we would have liked. But on liquidity, we actually have had the desired liquidity with the stocks that we've issued. So it's been interesting from us that when we look at the liquidity, it's actually quite where we would like it to be. So from that point of view, we've had certain advantages. But the other reality of having a business that's in a certain sector as one business for over 130 years is that everything tends to be designed around it. So you would find certain mandates are written to favor other JSE or JSE indices. So you literally have to sit with asset consultants and some of the pension funds to acknowledge that there are other exchanges. So part of really dealing with the market has been to also get the regulation to recognize that there's different entities in the market. Because now if you only have one index as a measure, if a fund manager puts money outside of that, they better have good results. If they don't, the person who gave them the mandate may say, what benchmark did you use?
Yeah.
So those are just some of the practicalities you find in the market of dealing with an entrenched system over time that in reality for the longest time listing meant JSE, but now listing means many other exchanges.
And there is an inherent conservatism that needs to be broken through here now.
I think education is critical. I think whether it's the JSE or any of the guys sitting around this table, I mean, listing is not a primary objective. I mean, it's an aspirational objective. But the minute, you know, there's these preconceived ideas about what listing involves and the costs and the regulation and the disclosure and the transparency and all of those things, and it's an education process. So now we've got to educate on what the benefits are of listing. Then you've got to educate on the different options available in the different product sets with the JSE, with 4AX, with ZARX, with EASY, less so with A2X because A2X is going to is attracting the secondary listings. But all of I don't think we do enough education. I'm not sure there's enough education in the business schools, in the commerce faculties around using a listing as a form of raising capital.
Well, it's only been 2 years since we had this plethora of competition from 1 to 5 now, and I think that will obviously take time. But yeah. But Kevin, just talk to me about some of the differences. For example, how is A2X, as Noah said, different to the other two exchanges we've got on the panel tonight? You do largely take secondary listings.
100%. So when we looked to design our model, we particularly looked internationally. We particularly looked at the first competitor to long-standing incumbent exchanges and how they did it. And although regulation in South Africa is somewhat behind, we try to find a way how we could build the business in a similar way within our regulation. And effectively, we came up with the secondary listing process. So now, if you were in many other jurisdictions and you had an exchange license, you would be able to list the companies that were in that jurisdiction and had a primary listing on one of the exchanges. In South Africa, you'd need their permission. So, you know, the key for us is obviously to get to the companies and educate them around the benefits of a secondary listing. Now, in short, it really is, you know, we're providing choice to people, and this is really from an investor point of view, on a lower cost venue, and that has positive impacts on price and liquidity. But it takes time, and I think you mentioned the point around trust. You know, the only way you build trust is through proving who you are and what you do and growing the business, and that takes time.
And how do you work to lower the bid offer spreads that do make an exchange like A2X so much more attractive?
So, look, it's early days, and what's really exciting for us is that obviously, as I mentioned, we looked internationally at first competitors, and just a stat for you, it took 24 attempts before a successful competitor broke the London Stock Exchange's hold. So, just to highlight how hard it is. So, in short, and this has happened internationally, if you reduce the cost of doing business, you get more business, right? And what they do, particularly in the modern market, now bearing in mind you get all types of investors. You get long-term investors who buy and hold for a five-year period with the hope of 100% return. At the other end of the scale, you get short-term investors. They call them quant funds, liquidity providers. Now, they're looking to do 10,000 transactions a day and take a minute turn, but also to make a return. We miss out on a lot of the short-term stuff because of we're seen as a high-cost destination. By reducing the cost, we start bringing these guys in. They pass on the cost savings, and that helps improve the quality of the market.
Right. Now, moving over to ZARX, I believe you don't allow things like high-frequency trading, the traders were made famous by Flash Boys. Why don't you allow kind of algo or high frequency traders on ZARX?
Yeah, again, I mean, simply for us, what we took as on as a model is we would try and make listings simple. That exchanges, in reality, what they are self-regulating organizations that create a platform where the investor knows what they're getting into, and companies can access capital markets and create liquidity. So that was the one thing. And the second one was we would try and make our systems much cheaper. That a retail investor, you want to invest with 1,000 rands, you can create an account because we don't have holding fees. We don't have, we then do a percentage based structure where we charge 1.5% and it goes down as you, as the volumes go higher. But that effectively allows you that with 1,000 rands you can open an account. We'll be launching an app where we do that. So really our focus is on simplicity, not overcomplication of derivative instruments, because really what those then tend to create is that they are for the top-end institutions that have systems to manage it. For now, we said really what we're trying to do is to build a business that makes capital markets accessible to the people that should get to them.
Well, and, you know, I spent the afternoon, I've said it a few times, talking about Stockvels and base of the pyramids, yeah. And 50 billion rands, the figure hasn't really changed for all that long, is estimated to be under a Stockvel management, yeah, in the various Stockvels around the country. Why hasn't it moved? Well, this money is either parked under the mattress or is parked with a wholesaler where the wholesaler grabs the interest and gives you groceries at the end of 12 months. Why are we not creating instruments where we can deepen access to capital markets, financial inclusion? I think Zarex's example is a good one of doing that.
So. No, I mean, that's exactly our point. You know, somebody actually answered this in one conference, and the gentleman was from the Reserve Bank in Nigeria, and he was asked about the market being largely unbanked, and he said, what does that mean? He says, you know, look at it this way, that a lot of people don't go to formal banking institutions because it's just not viable for them financially and doesn't make sense. But it doesn't mean that they are not banking. They may be banking informally. They may be having their own lending systems, keeping money under the mattress. So when you make the barriers to entry too high and too expensive and unresponsive, you then encourage people not to get into the system, because why should I? There's no benefit for me. And for me, that's what we're trying to do, to lower the barriers to enter, that it starts making sense.
It's a very fine line where we regulate people out of the market sometimes by trying to protect those very people that we want to try and bring into the market. And that said, though, Noah, how do you ensure that you do offer comfort to investors on these new exchanges? You obviously want to reduce the barriers, keep costs down, but you also want to ensure that we don't have too many Sagarmatas and Ayors, to name a few, winding up on your exchange.
So, I mean, part of the challenge is exactly that, is the regulatory environment, and to create a set of rules that are appropriate for the nature and size of company that would consider a listing on 4AX, number one. Number two, it's creating a platform that there's access to capital. So, and it's one of those conundrums, because what comes first, the quality company or the quality investor? The quality investors tell you they want the quality companies. The quality companies tell you they want the quality money.
It's real chicken and egg, this.
Correct. But you also need that balance. And to Saki's point, the reality is there is exclusion from a capital markets perspective in this country. How many people are invested directly in companies listed on exchanges in South Africa? Where are they? So what are they invested in? Are they being sold products that may or may not work for them? Are they not making their own personal financial decisions and kind of saying, look, I shop at Woolworths. I see 10 other people standing in the queue shopping in Woolworths. Why don't I also buy shares in the company? I buy their product. And it's an education process. And again, it comes back to that point that we made earlier. It's a process.
It is a process. It
takes time.
Would you buy Chuckles at over 50 rand a share, or Woolies at under 50 a share, I think, at the moment? It's an interesting question. But Kevin, turning now to the fact that we have more than one stock exchange, how do investors ensure that their broker, they sit down with their broker and say, are you giving me the best deal on trades? How do they ensure that they are getting the best deal?
So, look, it's interesting. If you look again, if we go back to Europe, when they introduced MiFID, they introduced the best execution rule that basically said you've got to get the best result for your client, and you are forced to look around to make sure you get the best price. And I mean, the example we often use, you know, you want to book a flight, if you're only looking at one airline, how do you know you're getting the best price? So I think it'll evolve. I think, you know, the exchanges have different rules. And I mean, clearly we're in a different space because we're looking at shares that have listings on the JSE and on A2X. And so we're driving brokers to say, look, it's important that you look across markets to get the best price. I think increasingly we are creating that awareness. I think the regulatory environment will follow at some stage. But, you know, it comes back to that educating all participants in the ecosystem.
No? Sorry, Michael. And I think it's interesting that, you know, the three of us are sitting in the room chatting to you. There's the incumbent isn't here, the other participant isn't here. But, and often, you know, we're pitted against each other. And I don't think it's necessarily a competitive. It's that, what's that MBAism, co-opetition. There's an element of cooperation with some competition. But the capital markets have to grow in this country, yeah, in order for all of us to benefit.
It doesn't have to be a zero-sum game.
Exactly.
On the back of that, which of the five exchanges do you consider to be competition?
So and that's exactly my point. I don't think we need to look at them as competition. We have different products that serve different markets with different value propositions, and hopefully there's a big enough marketplace out there to attract enough products to our market,
right,
so that, again, everybody
benefits. Would you both agree with that, Kevin? Would you agree with that?
So look, in terms of A2X, we compete in what we call the wholesale secondary market, and that is the JSE's bread and butter. So are we competing against them? Absolutely. We're competing with what we say is the latest tech, you know, customer service, and huge price reductions. So we are competing with them, but I do believe, I mean, I fully concur in the fact that innovation creates growth in an industry. And so it's not about just eating the JSE's lunch. It's about growing the overall pie. So we're very conscious of it. And I think there's no shortage of evidence to suggest that's exactly right. Most people go, oh, but is the market big enough? Well, actually, we don't know how big the market is because it's about how strong the value propositions are and how we can grow it. So
getting into that growth mindset, I think we could apply that in so many other areas in South Africa. Saki, just before we've got to go to a break, would you agree with those sentiments?
Yeah, no, thanks, Michael. I mean, I think that question is often an odd question to answer, but the truth is that we all compete with each other. that's the reality. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in business. But the other truth, which I think everyone agrees with, is that the market is big enough. And I don't think, for me, it's even about growth. I mean, the market cap of listed companies in South Africa is almost $1 trillion. And if you went beyond the top maybe 50 big companies and looked at liquidity of the companies at the bottom, there isn't much. And I think that's what we've got to address. I mean, I think if we were sitting here with exchanges that had a 200 billion market cap, the right kind of liquidity, and allowing access to new generation entrepreneurs to get into the market, it would be a different game. So for me,
But that's the vision. And you know, without that vision, I don't think anyone would be sold on this idea. And that vision is very easy to get behind. Yeah. It's a question of getting that snowball of momentum up to that point. Let's just cross. No, we're not crossing anywhere. We're taking a quick break, and hopefully when we return, we'll have time just for a concluding thought from each of you.
In Gauteng and the Western Cape, this is Classic Business.
Okay, we've got less than a minute, but I want to go around the table. Saki, where do we go from here?
I think eventually, as we're all saying, the market will come to accept that there's new products, there's a new way of doing things, there's value in different platforms. It's not easy. We're all under difficult economic times more than anything else. And I think that's what we also miss. Part of why people are not listing is that they've looked at companies at least who've not succeeded, and they then say, will we get the liquidity that we want? But I have no doubt that in the future there is going to be realization that there is scope to bring something new and innovative in the market.
Kevin?
Sure. I mean, I think the good thing is competition is irreversible. It's here to stay. And I think while it will take time, it brings really real benefits to end investors, to new potential companies listings, to the growth of capital markets in South Africa. And I think that's a good thing. And I guess my only message would be, you know, remain open-minded to listen and hear the value propositions of the people out there. Noah?
Kevin just said what I was going to say. And that is engage. I mean, I think all the exchanges have got good value propositions. I mean, I think, you know, whether it's technology, regulation, other services like registry, learn.
Learn, educate. Well, thank you for educating me and the listeners tonight on the work that you're doing and your journey so far over the last couple of years. I certainly think that competition is wonderful and we need to see a whole lot more of it. We look at Canada's got 4 equity exchanges, India's got 2, numerous regional exchanges over there, Mexico's got 2, the list goes on and on and on. We're really now just starting to play catch up. So thank you very much. 4AX's Noah Greenhill, Kevin Brady, CEO of A2X, and Saki Samnaka, Executive Director of ZARX. Thanks for tuning in to Classic Business tonight. Who's in the lounge? Oh, it's Kianete Fortwane, the always wonderful Kianete Fortwane. In the lounge for our Cape Town listeners, an Inkouting Classic Cocktail Hour in the company of Carolyn Stain. Good night.